That's true. Into hour number two, I am Jim Rome. Welcome to the program. We are live in Southern California. Let's not waste any time with this. Program brought to you by Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rockin' Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I don't want to waste any time with it because we found our guy. He is making his jungle debut. He is a PGA Tour golfer, a four-time major winner, back-to-back winner of the U.S. Open, back-to-back winner of the PGA Championship, finished in the top four of all four majors this year, PGA of America's Player of the Year. He is a world number one. He joins us now, Brooks Koepka. Brooks, good to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Everything good with you?
Good, man. Good. Great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for doing it. Let me start here. You made your season debut at the Shriners Hospitals for Children's Open in Vegas last week. How did you go about approaching that tournament, and how good did it feel to be back out there?
Yeah, it felt great to be back. Obviously, we had a very small off season. It was like 5 weeks for me, but put in some work and just didn't show. I felt close. Not the result I wanted. Nobody wants to miss a cut, but at the same time, it'll pay off in the long run, so I'm not too worried.
Brooks Koepka, my guest. And Brooks, your brother Chase made his fourth PGA Tour appearance last week. He opened things up with a 66 over the 4 days. He had three rounds in the 60s. How fired up were you to see him play the way he did?
Dude, it's cool. It's cool to watch him play. This year's been a struggle for him. He's been pretty down. Right now, he's actually playing Q-School out in Utah right now, and he's in second place on that first stage, so he's getting through that. It's cool to see. It's cool to see him succeed. You know, I'm obviously his biggest fan, and it's fun to watch. You know, he had it going there for a while, too, and then unfortunately made some mistakes. But at the same time, it's all a learning experience, and, you know, hopefully he can build on that.
He is the world number one. Brooks Koepka is my guest. You know, I read part of your resume at the very top, only part of it because I don't have time to read the whole thing. But as you look back on the season you had, which is one of the best in the history of golf, and you did it when you weren't able to practice a ton, what kind of thoughts do you have? I mean, is there a part of you that thinks, man, that's pretty damn good, or was that essentially what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, it is what I expected. I still think no matter if I'm practicing or not, I should be at the top, especially when it comes to those big tournaments. You see it in every other sport, you know, big time athletes, you know, they take care of it when they need to in big games, big tournaments. It doesn't matter. They get it done, find a way. It doesn't matter if you're sick or whatever. You've seen it throughout the test of time, and you just got to figure out a way to battle through it and get done. I mean, no one ever is 100% healthy. So you're just trying to get through it and see where you're at. And, you know, sometimes it's nice. I'd rather be mentally fresh and not practicing than be playing and mentally tired. You know, it's one of those things. I think golf's just so mental.
Brooks Koepka joining us. I see you working. I know exactly what you're talking about when you say that. Now, when you mention like other greats in other sports, despite the year you had, you didn't sweep every Player of the Year award. And I thought you had a great quote recently when asked about that. You said, quote, yeah, it would have been great, but I think everybody in the room knows. I mean, LeBron has only won four MVPs. I'm pretty sure he was the best player for more than those 4 years. It's a great line. It's an accurate statement. Again, that said, though, is there a part of you that thinks, you know, it is a little weird that you or LeBron don't have more awards?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of, amazing. You know, I was kind of shocked at it that I didn't win Player of the Year because, let's be honest, the trophy is named after Jack Nicklaus. So, I mean, obviously majors do matter, you know, when it comes down to it. So I find that kind of ironic. But, you know, it's one of those things where, at the end of the day, man, all you're remembered by is how many majors you win. You know, I'm pretty sure everyone knows how many majors Jack Nicklaus won, how many majors Tigers won, how many majors everybody else, Tom Watson, Gary Player, all these greats, Arnold Palmer. You know, if you ask them to be like, hey, how many PGA Tour events did you win? I don't even know. You know, it's one of those things. So that's what you're based on. It's basketball. It's about how many rings you've won. Football. How many Super Bowls? That's what you're judged by. And in golf, you know, it's majors for us. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm surprised, you know, I felt like I had a good enough year to win Player of the Year. But at the same time, you know, obviously I need to play better and make it, you know, a unanimous decision.
But talking to Brooks Koepka, you know, hearing you lay it out like that, Brooks, it seems to me a lot of guys get to a certain point in their career where they've accomplished a lot. Maybe they get satisfied. Maybe they start to slip. But what I'm hearing from you, I mean, it sounds like you haven't lost anything at all, and you've got that edge. You've got that motivation still yet. How do you go about maintaining that? I mean, what's motivating and driving you at this point? Is it the majors, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, majors, obviously. I think everybody can tell. It's the event that I get up for. You know, every time there's a major. I mean, you look at it, guys, now. You hear other guys say, you know, we're prepping for Augusta already right now. So, obviously, it's on everybody's mind. You know, Phil said it for years. You know, he's going to take the off season, and right when January 1 comes around, everybody's prepping for Augusta. So, it's one of those things. Majors, yeah, I get up for them. I love them. And it's something that, you know, it's what you're judged by. So, that's what motivates me. But at the same time, I just want to be the best. I want to be one of the best ever. And, you know, it's nice to finally be healthy again. And, you know, I'm going to try these next 5-6 years to really dedicate myself and see where – and actually try, you know, see what I can do. Because, you know, in golf in your prime, from 30 to about 35 is when you really can make some hay.
Bro, can you imagine how good you could be if you actually tried? Brooks Koepka.
It's going to be fun, I hope so.
Brooks Koepka, my guest. You know, the thing is, this is all part of the plan, though. I mean, the legend has it, back in 2014, you sat down with people close to you, and you talked about being number one, world number one. Rory McIlroy at that time was number one. And according to your father, you looked at what he was doing and then what you had to do to get there. You also just said to me, Brooks, I want to be one of the best ever. Do you want to be one of the best ever, or is the goal to be the best ever?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is it's hard to, you know, I look at it like basketball, right? I'm a big basketball guy. You take it, you've got like the LeBron era, you've got the Kobe era, and then you got the Michael Jordan era. So it's hard to kind of compare those three. But yeah, you know, in this era right now, you know, I don't want to say post Tiger Woods, but we all know it's going in that direction where who's going to take a stranglehold of the game once Tiger's gone. Because I'm still going to be playing when he's done. So when he's done, I want to be that best player. I mean, you look at it right now, yeah, obviously Rory's arguably the, you know, Rory and Dustin are probably the two that are going to be in the competition, or, you know, in the running for that. And it's just interesting. It's always fun. I mean, obviously Dustin's got his major. You know, it's one of those things where everybody's jockeying for position right now.
We're talking to Brooks Koepka. You know, you made that basketball analogy, and the fact is you've also made the point, Brooks, that I'm not your typical golfer. This is a quote now. I'm not your typical golfer. I'm not a golf nerd. I've got an athlete's mentality, a true athlete. It rubs people the wrong way. If it does, tough, end quote. Like, where does that athlete's mentality come from? Were you wired with that? Was it always like that? Or did you develop that, cultivate that, work on that?
A little bit of both, I think. Yeah, you've got to be born with it. I think every great athlete is born with a little bit of extra something. You see it in all the greats. But once you get a taste of winning, it's man, okay, you know, I don't want to let that go. So it's a combination of both. And then once you get the taste of winning those majors, I mean, no disrespect to any other win that I've ever had, but it's not the same feeling after you win a major and then another tournament. It's a completely different feel. Even around everybody around you, you know, the way I feel, it's completely different. And, you know, it's one of those things where once you do it, you just want to keep doing it. And then after that, it's like, man, I need to keep feeding this feeling.
Got a couple of more minutes with Brooks Koepka. He's the world number one. You know, Brooks, I so appreciate you doing this. So help me with this. For the last few years, it seems like there's this big effort on the part of the media in golf to either take a run at you or to try to figure you out. What do you make of all that?
I just laugh. I mean, it's quite funny to me. You know, the media is just doing their job, obviously. I get it. Sometimes I don't know why everybody, you know, I guess they kind of – I fit the mold of this, like, bad boy image of golf. It's kind of interesting. Everyone thinks I'm big, and I'm like, dude, I'm not big. You know, this big, bad, tough guy, but I'm not big. You know, we play golf. It's not a contact sport. But – you know, obviously, that being said, I'm bigger than a lot of other guys that are on the tour, so I guess I fit that mold for them, and that's the way that they're trying to drive it. And I don't let too many people in on what's going on in my mind. So it sounds stupid, but it's so simple, and they want an answer for it, and I'm giving them the answer, and it's like, well, that can't be just it. I'm like, it is. It's that simple. You know, you dummy it down to just get the ball in the hole quicker than everybody else. It's just that simple. Don't think about it. This is what I was. This is what I do for a living. I shouldn't have to. I'm not nervous. This is what I love. I want to feel that. Those nerves coming down 18. I want to feel that pressure because that means I'm doing something right.
You know what they always say, like the great athletes, there's so much, the expectation is so great that you finally get to a point where there's no exhilaration or joy in winning, just relief and misery in defeat. Is that the way it feels to you? Or, man, is there real exhilaration in winning a big tournament? Or relief?
No, it definitely is. I mean, there's obviously, you know, I remember after Erin Hills, the first major I won, it was like, man, that's why that's why we run all those miles. Like that, you know, I hate running. That was my thing. It was like, man, that is exactly why, like, I can appreciate that. Appreciate all the hard work, all my coaches, everybody's done, you know, along the way. You see how much effort everybody put in. It's fun, man. I enjoy that. That's why you train. That's why you put in all those hours on the range. That's why, you know, my parents sacrificed so much when I was a kid. And it's just a cool feeling, especially when you have everyone around you, your team, and everyone's around. That's when it's hard to explain.
Hey, Brooks, a couple of quick things before you go. You mentioned your coaches. You mentioned the work you put in. This is a great story. Chris Malloy was an assistant at FSU, and he was telling the story about how he was trying to organize sessions where you guys would run the steps at Doak Campbell, and it was supposed to be a punishment, but he said, quote, basically it was a problem because Brooks started to like it. After a while, he turned it into a workout session, good cardio, which to me is really funny that he's trying to crack down on you guys, and you're like, hey, man, this is great. What do you remember about those sessions?
Oh, I remember being terrible. But, yeah, I did love it. I secretly loved it, and I think they figured that out, so they stopped that pretty quickly. It was it's one of those things where, hey, I just figured it was making me better than everybody else that we were playing in college. You know, the results might not come right away, but eventually they'll come. It was fun. I mean, it pushed me. I don't know if anybody has ever ran the steps at Doak Campbell that's listening, but, man, they suck. They really do suck, but at the same time, you know, it was making me a better person. I was figuring everything out, getting stronger. And, hey, the more hours you put in, man, you're going to see those results.
I'm sure it did suck, but just like that, I know you figured out early on to embrace the suck. And a last thought, Brooks, I think people listening right now would never believe this, but you and I actually do have something in common. The same guy cuts our suits, David August. So I've got to ask you, what is your approach to style? Do you like suiting up, or is it just a hassle that you have to deal with on occasion?
No, David August, he's the best, man. He's so much fun. You know, obviously I've got to know him over the past maybe a year or so. I love dressing up, man. It's so much fun. You can see your style. I mean, you figure most of the time we're either in golf clothes, workout clothes, or just sweat. So it's different. You know, I like dressing up. It shows your style. It shows more fun. Really kind of shows us who we are. And I think, especially, I mean, if you look good in a suit, man, you're going to look good. And I like looking good.
Look good, feel good, feel good, play good. He is a PGA Tour pro, a four-time major winner, back-to-back winner at the U.S. Open, back-to-back winner at the PGA Championship. He is the world number one, and that was all part of the plan. Brooks, man, I appreciate you so much. I'm so glad you did that. That was a blast. Really good to have you on the show. Brooks, thanks so much.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Jim.
That was great. That was a lot of fun, Brooks. Well done. And I'll tell you why that was so great. And it goes back to one part of the conversation where I said, what is it about the media either coming for you or trying to figure you out? And I was said, as he continues to roll it up and win, he's letting everybody in a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And as I've always said, none of these guys are who we think they are, but especially Brooks Koepka. And I think right there, you see that conversation, man, that's who that guy is. You get that personality, you get that presence. He's awesome. A tremendous number one. I mean, that was so great. I am so pumped with that. That could not have gone any better. And because he let us in. Your thoughts on that? He also made the point of saying, look, I don't let a lot of people in. Tremendous athlete, great player, big sports fan. To me, that's the real Brooks Koepka right there. 1-800-636-8686. You know I will double back and I will reset that. First up, though, when we come back, Jim Trotter joins us. Always a great conversation. Jim Trotter is next. Definitely hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Hit me up on the phones, 1-800-636-8686, or email your response to that, your thoughts on the world number one, Brooks Koepka. Jim Trotter is coming up next. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Brooks Koepka coming in like a boss. Even the whole crew is still buzzing over that one. That was so much fun. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. I will reset that for you a little bit later on. Right now, though, we are joined by a very good friend of ours. Friend of the program, friend of mine, reporter, storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. He is Jim Trotter. Jim, what's going on?
Rowley, how you doing, man?
Good, bud, good. Being the big, big golfer that you are, I know you're impressed with Brooks Koepka. What do you think about this guy's approach, his mentality, the way he dominates? I'd never spoken to him before just a few moments ago. What's your take?
First of all, I wish I'd heard the interview. Unfortunately, I was doing some work and didn't catch it, but I'm a big fan of his. I'm a big fan of any golfer who can break 80, something I can't do. So, obviously, he can do that. But, no, he brings a certain intensity, a certain focus, a certain ability to the game that I think I'm always fascinated by people who are great at what they do, and he's great at what he does.
No doubt. Jim Trotter joining us. I had to ask you about that because I know you're such a fan of the sport and you've covered so many different kinds of athletes over the years. Jim, in last night's Giants-Patriots game, there was another incident involving PI, or I guess I should say not involving pass interference. Golden Tate certainly appeared to be interfered with. It was not called on the field. Then it was not called on review. What was your reaction when you saw that last night?
That we're being asked not to trust what we see. And, it was this way with Pat, the catch rule. Is it a catch? Is it not a catch? And, for Jim, for a long time, I said, it's kind of like pornography. You know it when you see it. And I think we know a catch when we see it. And I think we know pass interference when we see it. And unfortunately, there have been, 40 challenges, in terms of pass interference called or not called. And only 7 have been successful. And Kevin Seifert of ESPN posted a stat that said only one of the last 21 challenges have been successful. So to me, I just don't understand it. I think I see pass interference. I think most coaches think they know what it is. And yet when they challenge it, either being called or not called, they're unsuccessful. And you can hear the frustration in the coaches' voices today. Even John Harbaugh spoke out about it. That really they don't know what to do, and a lot of coaches now are simply going to keep the flag in their pocket rather than throw it, because it seems pretty certain at this point that you are not going to win any challenges on that. And I know that Al Riveron, the head of officiating, says he talks about there being a clear hindrance, so to speak, of a receiver. And again, I know what I saw last night. What I saw last night was pass interference, and the fact that it wasn't called. Even on challenge, it's just stunning to me.
In other words, if it appears to be porno, it is porno. And last night was a clear hindrance. So, Jim, what's going on here? Is it a matter of the folks handling the review, not wanting to embarrass or overrule the officials on the field? Is this something else? Exactly what is this?
Well, Romy, if that's it, then don't put the rule in. It seems to be an overreaction to what happened in the Saints game against the Rams last year in the NFC Championship game. And everybody knew that there was an infraction there. And so there should be a way to have that addressed. And so they put in this rule. Well, once you put it in, you should follow it. And we all said at the time when they put the rule in, this is going to be really interesting because at times it's such a subjective call and you're putting the officials in a really tough situation. But again, when we see some of these calls to us as laymen, it's obvious. And yet, back in New York, they are not calling it, or they're not ruling in favor of these coaches who are challenging it. So I don't understand it. I don't know if this rule was put in place simply so that if we get in a situation like we were a year ago with the Rams and the Saints, and there is an egregious call like that, that they have the opportunity to address it then. When people's, livelihoods and chance to win a championship and all those things are on the line,
But as of right now, it's kind of, they're not calling it. And again, it's like last year when they put in the helmet rule and initiating contact and said when offensive players, if they lower their helmet to initiate contact, penalties would be called. But we didn't see them called. This is kind of the same thing to me. So I would have preferred if you just leave it alone then and say that the Rams-Saints was a one-off and move on. But instead, now we have all this uncertainty, which I don't think is good for the game.
Yeah, I don't either. In fact, it seems to me, Jim, at this point, if they saw that play again right now, I'm afraid they'd review it and not call a flag on that play or throw a flag on that play either at this point. I think that's how bad it is. Jim Trotter is joining us. Yeah.
No, it's not good.
All right, so I had 49er DeForest Buckner on the show in the first hour. If we go back to early spring, Jim, you were saying that you had faith that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan were going to get this thing turned around. What do you make of what you've seen from them the first four games?
Well, the first thing, Jim, was when I said that was I just wanted to see the team healthy for a change, you know, particularly at the quarterback position. Since Kyle Shanahan has gotten to San Francisco, there were always injuries, and particularly at the quarterback position. And so knowing I have so much respect for how he's able to scheme and game plan and those things, I just wanted to see what he could do with a healthy squad, and now we're starting to see that. And look, this is a talented club. I don't think it's an elite club yet, but I think the fact that any time you can play defense and any time you can run the ball, you have a chance to be successful in this league. And right now, they're able to do that. And with Jimmy Garoppolo healthy, who I think still is learning, still has some things to prove, still needs to develop. But under Kyle Shanahan, I think, you know, he's got one of the best offensive minds in football. And I think that he is going to continue to develop. So when you put that defense together with what Kyle is able to do offensively, I think this is going to be a tough team to deal with, you know, throughout this season.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. Now, Jim, we're a few days out from the firing of Jay Gruden. Bruce Allen would like everybody to know that the culture there is, quote, damn good, which is a joke. I mean, it's so comical. When you look at how many head coaches they've been through since Dan Snyder took over, is there any reason to think that the things are going to change anytime soon?
No. And again, Jim, this is another example of don't believe your eyes, you know. Things are not well in Washington, and the culture is not good, regardless of what Bruce has to say publicly. But I always say this, people point to Jay Gruden or Bruce Allen, and I always go back to it. It starts at the top. An owner sets the culture, sets the tone in an organization, and Dan Snyder has a way that he does things, and the record speaks for itself. You know, outside of bringing back Joe Gibbs for a second term after Joe came out of retirement, there really hasn't been much success there. And there's just always some sort of drama. And what we see happening there now with Dwayne Haskins and the way that that whole thing went down and what's being said and what's being leaked out of the building, it's just not good. And the Trent Williams situation, look, if you have a player, you have an asset who has made it very clear he is not going to play for you. And right now Trent Williams seems very firm that he will not play for Washington again. Then why not get something for that asset prior to the trading deadline? And maybe they will. We still have a few weeks to go. But based on everything that I've seen and the way that they handle these situations, I don't believe that they're going to trade them and therefore won't get anything for a player who could bring in, you know, a significant haul for them. And this is a team that clearly is rebuilding and needs pieces. But no, the culture starts at the top. And so, you know, unless they're going to change owners, I don't see much changing.
We're talking to Jim Trotter for a few more moments. Speaking of culture, you know, for all the headlines, Jim, that Jerry Jones generates, does it feel to you like maybe he's taken a step back when it comes to football decisions and that he's finally left those to his football guys?
I'll say this to you, Jim. I think he's more receptive to their ideas. But I said to him 2 years ago exactly what you just said to me, that it appears he has taken a step back and he is relying on Stephen Jones and Will McClay more than he has in the past, and he is deferring to them. And in his own Jerry way, he put me in my place and let me know he's still the owner and he's still the guy who makes the decisions there. So having said that, I will say I do believe he is more receptive to their ideas, but at the end of the day, Jerry will let you know that Jerry makes the decision.
Jim Trotter, my guest. Jim, Colin Kaepernick's reps released a statement yesterday addressing the false narratives regarding Kaepernick and reminding everybody that not a single team has brought him in for a workout. Seattle brought him in, but they did not work him out. When you look at all the other QBs who've been worked out or who have actually have jobs, what do you make of that at this point?
Look, Jim, for me, there's no other way to say it than it's a joke. Colin Kaepernick, at the time that he was playing, was better than half the quarterbacks in the league. And while you might think he's not a great quarterback, that should tell you about the quality of play at the position in the NFL. So the fact that that teams are going out on the street and bringing in people that no one's ever heard of, who don't have a resume to stand on, and that Colin Kaepernick is still out there, to me is just a flat-out joke. And it's unfortunate because all he did was stand up and shine a light, or I'm sorry, take a knee and shine a light on something that's very important to a lot of people, on an injustice that's taking place in this country. So, you know, I've had this discussion with some owners about, you know, you hear about, well, it hurts the bottom line. You could hurt your bottom line if you bring him in and this, that, and the other. And I've asked a couple owners in particular whom I respect and said, when is enough enough for an owner or any person of wealth? You know, when do you have enough money? When do you stand on principle and say this is the right thing to do, although it may hurt us some on the bottom line? And the response that I got from each was, that's a very good question. So I never got an answer. But to me, I think ultimately history is going to show who was right in this whole situation. And it was Colin. And it's just unfortunate that he's being treated this way.
You know, Jim, when you mention owners and the way they go about making their decisions and what it comes down to, you and I have talked in the past about owners and how they hire coaches. One last thought. I'm looking at Pittsburgh, and I'm hearing the speculation that Dan Snyder might be interested in Mike Tomlin. I could see where Snyder would love Tomlin and would do anything to try to get Tomlin. Do you think it's reciprocated? What do you think Tomlin thinks of Snyder and that opportunity? Could you ever see that happening?
I've learned to never say never, Jim. But I know that Mike is from that area. I think he's clearly focused on getting things turned around in Pittsburgh right now. He has made that clear that he is focused on this week's game and not any of the speculation that's out there. I do know that for the last couple of years, I've heard from people in that organization that if Mike Tomlin ever became available, regardless of who Dan Snyder's coach was, that he would make a run at Mike Tomlin. So I do know that there would be interest on that side. But I think Mike is focused on getting it right. And look, if Mike were ever to be let go in Pittsburgh, the reality is that he's going to have his choice of jobs. So where would he end up? I would hope he would choose a place where, you know, that there is a culture of commonality in terms of everyone working together, and where you can be successful. Is that Washington? It doesn't appear to be that way right now.
He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. And he is a very good friend of the program. Jim, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
No, brother. Always glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
My man. Jim Trotter. Nobody better. His book on Junior Seau is amazing, too. Hall of Fame voter, friend of the program, great storyteller and reporter, Jim Trotter. All right, so we are through with the interview portion of the program. Good, good interview day. DeForest Buckner back in hour one. Brooks Koepka crushed his jungle debut, and Jim Trotter always does when he comes on. 1-800-636-8686. We can reset any of those three. I thought Brooks Koepka was amazing in talking about the majors and the Player of the Year award. In fact, I thought he was amazing pretty much on everything. All of that is still ahead. In addition to that, Gerrit Cole was a beast last night. Now we get the ALCS that we all expected and that we all wanted. Astros, Yankees, who do you have? A San Diego Padre minor leaguer. Went to the wrong house at the wrong time and got stuck in the wrong doggy door and got lit up. That story's coming up too. I had a really nice conversation with Randy Couture this week that I want to reset for you. All of that's still ahead, but first, here's a sports update. Sunday is an NFL and CBS doubleheader, with many of you seeing two of the most dynamic young quarterbacks in the game airing it out. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs welcoming Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Great matchup. Then you've got the Cowboys at the Jets. It all begins with JB and the team getting you focused for football on the NFL today at noon Eastern and 9 Pacific on CBS. Better late than never, Albie. Thanks, bro. Thanks for hitting that post the same day. Let me go back to Brooks Koepka for a minute. So again, that question where I said, hey, Brooks, what do you make of the golf media either coming for you, taking a run at you, or spending all this time trying to figure you out? I think it's a lot of the fan base, too. Like, people think that this guy's kind of terse, gruff, short with his commentary. Man, how do you hear the interview and not come away liking Brooks Koepka? There's no way. I defy any of you. There's no way you could have heard that interview and not come away with, damn, I like that guy. I like that guy. He's smart. He's funny. He's thoughtful. Man, dude pulls no punches. He's candid. He's real. You can't tell me that you hear that interview and think or not think, I want to have a beer with that guy. He was so interesting to me and so engaging and so likable and so real. And what I mean by real is this. He wins a major. He does something that's never been done before. He finishes in the top four of all the majors, and yet he's not player of the year. Exactly how does that work? And even he had a question or two about that. Almost anybody else would have said, well, you know, got to tip my hat to Rory. Rory's the guy. And Brooks did say, oh, I guess I'm going to have to play better. But only after making the point that, yeah, it is kind of curious. I mean, exactly how does that work?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of, I guess, amazing. You know, I was kind of shocked at it that I didn't win player of the year. Because, let's be honest, the trophy's named after Jack Nicklaus. So, I mean, obviously majors do matter, you know, when it comes down to it. So I find that kind of ironic. But, you know, it's one of those things where, at the end of the day, man, all you're remembered by is how many majors you win. You know, I'm pretty sure everyone knows how many majors Jack Nicklaus won, how many majors Tigers won, how many majors everybody else, Tom Watson, Gary Player, all these greats, Arnold Palmer. You know, if you ask them to be like, hey, how many PGA Tour events did you win? I don't even know. You know, it's one of those things. So that's what you're based on. It's basketball. It's about how many rings you've won. Football. How many Super Bowls? That's what you're judged by. And in golf, you know, it's majors for us. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm surprised, you know, I have felt like I had a good enough year to win player of the year. But at the same time, you know, obviously I need to play better and make it, you know, a unanimous decision.
That guy won't do media. That guy's got nothing to say. That guy won't let you win. Oh, he will. He's going to pick his spots now. He's got plenty to say. He's just going to pick his spots. And he had plenty to say on that topic. And I agree with everything he just said. He's right. We all know how many majors all those guys have. We don't give a damn about how many FedEx Cups you have. You know, so that whole thing about, all right, Brooks and Tiger, this great rivalry. Well, that never materialized because Tiger's got nothing left. I mean, it is what it is, right? It's not his fault. So now we have Brooks and Rory. Rory was the player of the year. Brooks should have won player of the year. Now we're going to get that rivalry because every sport needs a great rivalry. Who you got? I've got Brooks all day long. All day long. You see Rory tee it up, and I like Rory. I've always liked Rory. You see him tee it up in his own backyard, all eyes on him, and 8 on the first hole of the Open Championship. That doesn't exactly speak of clutchness, does it? Or player of the year, for that matter. This guy's the Open Championship, first hole, at home, beloved, all eyes on him, and he shoots himself out of a major on the first hole in his own backyard. Does that sound like player of the year? And then back to Brooks. Again, the guy, he could not have been more engaging or engaged in that conversation. And to that point about, well, what is it? What do you make, Brooks? What do you make of the media either coming for you or trying to figure out what you're all about and what makes you go?
I just laugh. I mean, it's quite funny to me. You know, the media is just doing their job, obviously. I get it. Sometimes I don't know why everybody – you know, I guess they kind of, I fit the mold of this like bad boy image of golf. It's kind of interesting. Everyone thinks I'm big and I'm like, dude, I'm not big. You know, this big, bad, tough guy, but I'm not big. You know, we play golf. It's not a contact sport, but you know, obviously that being said, I'm bigger than a lot of other guys that are on the tour. So I guess I fit that mold for them and that's the way that they're trying to drive it. And I don't let too many people in on what's going on in my mind. So it sounds stupid, but it's so simple and they want an answer for it. And I'm giving them the answer and it's like, well, that can't be just it. And I'm like, it is. It's that simple. You know, you dummy it down to just get the ball in the hole quicker than everybody else. It's just that simple. Don't think about it. This is what I do for a living. I shouldn't have to. I'm not nervous. This is what I love. I want to feel that. Those nerves coming down 18. I want to feel that pressure because that means I'm doing something right.
Like, if he had come on the show and I asked him that one question and he gave me that one answer and that was it, that would still be one of my favorite interviews of the year. There was so many great things in that answer, starting with, quote, dude, I'm not big. Dude, I'm not big. It's like, dude, he's not tall, but dude, he's big. He's big now. I don't think anybody would doubt that. He's just not tall. I mean, he's like 6 feet, but he's big. I mean, clearly, you look at a guy like that, you don't want to mess with a guy like that. And I love his whole point about, man, this is not hard. This is not hard. It's my job to get the ball in the hole and to do it faster than everybody else. And I love the reaction. Let me share some of the reaction on Twitter. Robbie Liaga tweets, Brooks Koepka with a straight fire. You can tell he has that swag and the it factor that makes him great. He makes golf fun with his attitude. Beaks tweets, not a big golf guy, but Koepka gives a damn good interview. Wore the cap. JD and MSN tweets, so refreshing to hear from an athlete that does not dance around questions. You get complete honesty. I totally respect that. War Brooks Koepka. Eric RBV tweets, great interview. Brooks Koepka is exactly what the PGA Tour needs. Very interesting person. My Two Cents Worth tweets, Brooks expects to win everything, just like Tiger. No wonder half the tour is scared of the little guy. At MMT Gracia tweets, that was an incredible interview of Brooks. It felt more like a conversation. I understand Brooks a lot better now in what his mentality and approach is towards golf and winning. That was a great, great conversation. I'm fired up. I'm still fired up. All right, so we're setting up for hour number three. If you want to react to it, go ahead. Still ahead in hour number three. You know you've had yourself a night when you go out on a bender, you come home, you try to enter the wrong house, and not through the front door, not through the back door, not even through a window, but through a dog door. You try and enter. I don't know about you. My old man used to always tell me this. If I heard this once, I heard this a million times. Son, my dad would be like, yo, Van Smack, let me tell you something. Nothing good ever happens at 3:30 in the morning when you try to enter a house through a doggy door. Remember that, Van Smack. I said, I got it, Dad. You tell me this every freaking week. I got it. No, listen to me. Nothing good ever happens at 3:30 in the morning when you try to go into a house through a doggy door. You got that? Yeah, I got that, Pops. I got that. I said that to my son, Jake, before I sent him to Wisconsin. Hey, let me tell you something, Junior. Nothing good ever happens at 3:30 in the morning when you get stuck in a doggy door. That's coming up. Stay tuned. Hour number three, straight ahead.